presentations yesterday afternoon, just after 4 o'clock from the National Treasury. And you must also be mindful of the amendment that was adopted by the National Assembly on the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill, as proposed by the Standing Committee on Finance. It's a one-pager, but I don't see it in the documentation that is given to that is given to honourable members. Can the staff just update us on that? It is B59A 218/2018. Can someone?
Thank you, Chair. After the amendment was requested by the Standing Committee on Finance, so we thought the standing, because it was not requested by Treasury, so the final document on B39B are with the Standing Committee on Finance. Yes, that's what I'm saying. You want to ask update on what was happening there? Okay. What happened is that when we were doing the amendment to the TLAB and the rate bill, and then on the MTBPS, the minister introduced the tax bills to Parliament together with the three zero-rated items based on the panel. After the bills were introduced, the Standing Committee on Finance requested an amendment to put a review provision of the increase in VAT.
Yes.
So because the review provision is an admin provision, it was not made in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Act. They put the review provision in the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill. Yes, okay.
But this committee must deal with it.
Yes.
That's why I'm asking the question.
Okay.
Where is the document?
Okay.
Can someone please use some clarity?
Thank you, Chair. What is in front of members is the bill as referred by the SOB to us. This is the amended version by the Standing Committee on Finance, so that the bill that is in front of the committee, not the other way around. Thanks.
Now, our legal advisor, can you please give some more clarity, which I don't have?
Thank you, Chair.
This is referring to Section 28 of the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill. B39A of 2018. My question is, why is this paper not with the members?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure which paper you're referring to. Are you referring to the B bill? The A list.
B39A of 2018.
Chair, ordinarily...
What do you need more?
May I respond?
Yes, please.
Chair, ordinarily, if the Standing Committee has made amendments to a bill, it will be reflected in a B-bill. That B-bill gets passed by the House, the National Assembly, and transmitted to the NCOP. So what the Select Committee will get is a B-bill, not an A-list from the NCOP. And that's the B-bill in front of you. Well, it's the one that I'm looking at now, Chair.
Well,
I've been informed that the amendment is in here.
Thank you, we should now correct it. Thank you.
Okay.
The chairperson didn't receive this package. I received the package that was in my pigeon.
I haven't received any.
That's correct. Sorry for that. But everyone must be treated the same. Good morning, honorable members. Sorry for this interruption. You're all welcome. Are there apologies? There's something. Honorable Dion George submitted an apology due to personal family business. There is one apology. Are there any other? And from Honorable Notara. She is at the international meeting in Mozambique. Yeah, that is the two apologies. Can we adopt the two apologies? Can I get indication from members? Thank you. Adopted. Honorable members, with your agenda.
Don't have an agenda.
Honorable members, we are here to deal with all the taxation laws amendment bills, referring to the taxation law amendment bill, the tax administration laws amendment bill, the rates and monetary amounts and amendment of revenue laws bill, and lastly, after we've done that, the consideration and adoption of the committee report on the proposed fiscal framework, that is 99.9%, nearly the same report we adopted on the revised fiscal framework. It's just a few minor amendments. So without any other to do, we're going straight to the presentations. But you also received from the committee secretary a document by the VAT panel. It was sent yesterday on Friday. And I also requested Nosipu to give you a copy of this document from the PwC, what is their assessment on the package announced by the Honorable His Excellency the President. To Treasury, welcome. Please introduce yourselves, and we will lead the presentation. Thank you.
My name is Yam Amputa, Chief Director, Tax Policy, National Treasury.
Chris Axelson, Chief Director, Economic Tax Analysis, National Treasury. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Mpolo Khote from National Treasury. I'm the Director for VAT and Excise Duties.
Morning, Franz Chabasek, South African Revenue Service.
Morning, Good
morning, I'm Anthony Gillis. I'm DDG for Asset and Liability Management, and I will be excusing myself just for 11 because I'm actually here for the later meeting, so thank you.
Well, we saw you on Friday in the appropriations meeting. Welcome to the team from Treasury, a very strong team. Please start your discussion, take us through your briefing document.
Thank you, Chair. We request that maybe we start with the briefing on the rates bill.
The rates bill?
Yes.
The rates
bill? Yes, the briefing is entitled Budget Proposal and Draft Rate and Monetary Amount and Amendment of Revenue Laws Bill.
Honourable members, what we're doing now was actually announced by the Minister of the then Minister of Finance. When the national budget was tabled and dealt lengthy in the budget review document. So I'm just taking you back in February, but we're actually coming to the nitty-gritty now. Over to you.
I think we're going to start with the rest and then do the T11.
Thank you, members. So we're going to do the 2018 budget proposal and draft rates and mandatory amounts.
Do members have this one?
Yes,
no. Order.
No, why are you contacting?
Order, members, let's listen to the briefing. I know you're excited, we're ready for December, but let's do the work. Thank you.
Thank you, members. So this is, as the Chair says, this bill, the draft, which we call the rate bill, really tries to implement all the main revenue budget announcements that were made. So the budget announces changes to rates, changes to thresholds. It announces the measures that we need to use in order to raise additional revenue. This budget, we have to raise the most amount of money in many, many years. We tried to raise an additional $36 billion. So this rate bill was published draft form on the day of the budget, and it's been through a long consultation process because it increased the VAT rate increase. And now has finally got to this committee later on in the year. So just to go through I'll go through the slides quite quickly. If I do recall, Chair, that this committee was part of the budget and the NCBVS statements in the joint sitting where we discussed a lot of these issues. So the 2018 budget contains these significant proposals. In the budget review, you can get all the details of those proposals. This rate bill did follow a slightly separate process to the other bills. And all the above are first draft bills. They were first draft bills, and they were tabled after the public hearing. So this bill was tabled with the other, with the TLAB and the TALAB during the medium-term budget policy session. So if we go to slide three, this is just to give you a background on the very large revenue shortfall. So this was an extraordinary budget where we had to raise a lot of money, and it is because there were extraordinary shortfalls. This slide tries to show that we were, you know, 21 billion below our forecast on personal income tax, 13 billion below on net value-added tax, 5 billion below on dividends withholding tax, et cetera, et cetera. So we thought we were going to be about 48 billion below what our estimates were. This immediately creates an issue because we have expenditure commitments that we make, and now if you have such large revenue shortfalls, either you need to increase borrowing dramatically, which could push up our interest rates and be difficult to finance, or you needed to raise taxes. And so we needed to raise, even though we had a 48 billion shortfall, we proposed to raise 56 billion in additional revenue. If you go to slide four, this details what we tried to do in order to raise that 36 billion. So the major component was the 1 percentage point increase in VAT from 14% to 15%. There was also very limited bracket creep for the bottom three personal income tax brackets, which I'll get into, and we didn't provide any relief for the top four brackets in personal income tax. We also increased the ad valorem excise duty on luxury goods from 7% to 9%. We increased the cap on luxury motor vehicles from 25% to 30%. We had a higher estate duty rate of 25%, and these, all those four brackets that I've just spoken about are in this rate bill, so this rate bill covers those changes. There was also a 22 cents per litre increase in the general fuel levy, a 30 cents per litre increase in the RAT levy. Those two points aren't covered in this rate bill, they're in the Customs and Excise Act. And there was increases in excise duties on alcohol and beverages and tobacco between 6% and 10%. That's also included in this rate bill. Okay, so if we go to slide five, this is in our budget, and this tries to show you in the top red box, you can see the 36 billion, and this gives you a full breakdown on how much every change added to our revenues. So for example, in the blue box, it says revenue from not fully adjusting for inflation. By only increasing the brackets by, I think there's about 3.1% instead of inflation, and not increasing the top four brackets, in effect, we made 6.8 billion just from that personal income tax change. If you go down, you can see the biggest change there is 22.9 billion, which is the increase we expected to get from value-added tax. But there are also increases, 1.2 from the general fuel levy, another 1 in the ad valorem excise duties, 1.9 from the introduction of the health promotion levy that this committee spoke about last year. So if we go to slide 6. The draft rate bill gives effect to the tax proposal. Well, it's not draft anymore, it's the rate bill. Gives effect to the tax proposal dealing with tax rate mainly thresholds, so it relates to all those income tax, transfer duty, VAT, customs, and excise duties. So all those rates have been effective since 1 March or 1 April of this year. So all of these changes have been effective.
It's important sentence you just repeated.
So all the proposals have been effective since either 1 March or 1 April from this year already, so it has been in place. We have, according to the law, we have 12 months in which to pass the rate bill in order to give effect to those rates that were increased. If it's not passed, it will be very difficult for us in terms of finding out what to do. So, in effect, this bill does include changes that are already effective. I think I've spoken about the fact that it was published on budget. We've been dealing with it informally, and then it was tabled on NCDPS on the 24th of October. We go to the next slide, slide 7. I think we did show the committee this earlier in the year. There's just a lot of the questions we've got, and there are public hearings tomorrow, will be on why VAT. Why did National Treasury increase VAT and not any others? We've gone through a lot of these arguments, which was just to bring them up again. But you can see in this slide on slide 7 that the the proportion of taxes that have been going to personal income taxes has been increasing since 2010, and a lot of that really is from changes in personal income tax policy. Yet, in the previous few years, we've been increasing personal income taxes, and yet we aren't getting enough revenue. I think you saw in the second slide, we're about $21 billion down on what we thought we would get from personal income tax. So the consistency and the buoyancy of revenues is a huge concern for us. In slide 8, it details the increases in personal income taxes that we've had over the past few years. The amount that you pay in personal income taxes is a lot higher than it was 5 years ago. There have also been very progressive changes to the personal income tax system. We've moved to medical tax credits, we've limited the deduction on retirement funds, and we've increased the effective capital gains tax rate from 10 to 18% over the past few years. A lot of people also say, but why can't we tax the rich more? And so last year we increased the rate from 41 to 45% for taxable incomes above $1.5 million. So we had a big increase in the top personal income tax last year. That was expected to bring in about $4.4 billion. Given the shortfall in personal income tax of about $21 billion, it's probably not going to bring in that amount. So you can see from a very large increase in the top rate, we didn't make enough money. The amount of revenue we needed to make this year was $56 billion. So we're not going to get that type of revenue from only taxing the rich. There just aren't enough of them in our income tax base. We are also worried about the impact on avoidance and evasion and the impact on work efforts and economic activity. If you go to slide 10, this just shows the changes to the personal income tax tables that are in this rates bill that the committee will be voting on. So the table on the right, table 4.5, shows the tax table in 2017-18 on the left and the tax table in 2018-19 on the right. You can see that the bottom three brackets have all been increased by 3.1%. So it's, you know, 0 to 189,880 and then 0 to 195,850 is taxed at 18, and all of those have been increased. In the lower red box, you can see that the top four brackets have not been changed. We didn't provide any inflationary relief to the top four brackets, which would make the system slightly more progressive. In the bottom, you can see the tax threshold in that bottom green box. The tax threshold, the tax-free threshold, was increased from 75,750 to 78,150. So it is, if you are earning below 78,150, don't pay any personal tax. Okay, if we go to the next slide, there is also a change in the medical tax credit in this rate bill. It was increased from 303 Rand per month per initial beneficiary to 310, and from 204 Rand per month to 209 Rand per month for additional beneficiaries. This was not a full inflationary increase. Our forecasts assume everything will increase by inflation, but here we only increased it by 2.3%. And the reason from this was to raise 700 million in order to fund the initial expansion of NHI. We have pre-announced this slight reduction in the medical tax credit. It's not a nominal reduction, it's just we're not providing full inflationary relief for the next 2 years. So this next budget, again, there will again be a lower than inflationary increase, and the following budget, there will again be a lower than inflationary increase. So for the next 2 years, the same thing will happen, and the amount that we save will go to the NHI. But those amounts that we save are already in the expenditure commitments. But you can see that that's the impact. On the 12th slide, we spoke about, this is what was covered in the budget, about our VAT rate. It's a very efficient, certain source of revenue. The problem was we needed revenue, and we needed it to be efficient and certain in the short term. And there was also a lot of research that we spoke about in some of the responses to the budget on the fact that VAT is the most efficient source of revenue, i.e. it will be the least distortionary to economic growth. So if you needed to increase taxes, but to have a minimal impact on employment or investment, VAT, the literature has shown, is the best option to take. It was last adjusted in 1993 and is lower than the global and African average. This has been a very difficult conversation this year on VAT, and we recognized it was a very tough decision to make. You know, and it was a very difficult thing to do, but we did feel it was in the country's best interests, and we are painfully aware of the impact that it has had on lower-income individuals, which is why a lot of work has been done on what could be done on the zero rating side, which I'll get into later. So, on slide 13, my colleague Umphor Korte will carry on and talk about the details around the VAT system and the VAT increase in the panel. Thanks.
Well, you are the VAT expert.
Thank you. Just from here. Trying to be. thank you, Chris, and good morning again, honourable members. Just looking at the debate on the VAT increase. There was quite a lot of comments and reports that were coming out from stakeholders about what Treasury could have looked at or maybe done. One of the issues was whether to introduce a luxury VAT, in a sense that within the VAT system, look at certain items that are considered luxury items and then impose a higher rate on those items and leave the current 14% on items that are generally or not considered luxury items. And when we looked at that and we look at the work that was done by the Health Commission with regards to the desirability of having that kind of like a system or like multiple rate system, basically, they investigated the introduction of the luxury VAT and also argued that basically if you want to look at the redistributive aspect of the tax system, doing it through the VAT system it doesn't provide the necessary benefit that people are looking for. And also
giving the necessary benefit that people are looking for. What were you looking for? Give more detail.
Okay.
Don't make a general statement.
Okay. In a sense, is that the argument was that identify items that you consider luxury items and then impose on those items a higher rate of VAT and then keep the other items which are considered non-luxury items at a rate of 14% so that you increase the revenue from the increased rate on luxury items. Now, the issue with that is that having those multiple rate systems, having, let's say, for example, a 14% rate on other items, and, for example, having a 20% luxury VAT on goods that are considered luxury items, from the benefits that you want to derive in terms of having a system that is equitable and also looking at redistributive or not having the most negative impact on the poor. Basically, by doing that, multiple rate doesn't give you that because by having multiple rate system, it complicates the VAT system and then again, it encourages sort of like abuse of the VAT system and it's also sort of like the administration that is related to having multiple rate systems. Because again, there will be disputes about the goods, whether a good should be in the general or non-essential items or should be considered an essential or a non-luxury item. So basically then you get into sort of like those disputes. So again, goods then in terms of classification, it becomes a problem to say, what is considered a luxury item and all of that. And for the administration, it becomes quite a complex. Now, the issue is, once we have a system like that, when we have sort of designed it with the intention that you want to sort of like protect the poor by having a standard VAT rate and then a higher VAT rate, you don't get to realize the benefit of doing that in the system because you're just introducing complexity in the system, but you don't get the necessary benefit. Because again, the issue about identifying the luxury items, the question is then, how much revenue are you going to derive from that? Because again,
The BAT system is a broad system which applies to a broad base of goods. But now, if you want sort of like a selection of products that you want to classify as luxury and impose a higher rate on it, now the question is how much revenue are you going to raise from that? You know, vis-a-vis the administration cost that you are bringing into the system for having this multiple rate of debt.
Now we're coming to the questions.
The point of tariff, if you'll allow me. I'm sorry to do this. I'm trying to just understand what the gentleman is saying, so I need you to clarify something for me to comprehend. If you would allow me. Okay. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Chair. Sorry. Just a quick point, if I might just talk to the gentleman through you, Chair. You're explaining the administrative issues regarding having a two-tiered structure in terms of VAT. I comprehend that. Now, when I read further and I'm in trying to understand this, you mentioned the issue of luxury goods. And how do you begin to identify and separate what is luxury and non-luxury? Accepted. But then the ad valorem tax on luxury goods is then, excuse me, increased from 7 to 9%. Right. Now, how then, based on what you're explaining to us, so that I can comprehend and understand exactly what you're implying, is how then do you identify the issue of luxury tax on and apply it to in terms of ad valorem tax? Is it not two systems?
So you want the criteria.
That's what I'm asking, sir. That's why I asked
okay.
your permission to
stop. Got it. He's got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can you elaborate a bit more?
Okay, so that I can understand. All right. So if you look at later on in the slide, we have the current list of ad valorem items.
Just speak into
the mic. Later on in the presentation, there's a list of ad valorem items. And then when you look at those ad valorem items, those mostly like your electronic items and all of that. And the list is a very short list. Because again, you know...
Is that slide 15?
Slide 14. And I must say that basically that ad valorem excise list, over the years, that list has been reduced because what was once a luxury
right.
over time it becomes a necessary. So the list basically has become narrow. Now, if then, for example, you say you want to introduce a luxury bed, right? So it means then you are going to have this narrow list of items, and then you impose a higher rate on it. Now the issue is, how much revenue are you going to get out of it? Vis-a-vis the administration complexity that you are bringing into the bank system. So that's why we're saying, you know, instead of having a luxury bank in the bank system, we have this ad valorem that currently exists. Can we sort of like look at that ad valorem list and work with that? You know, instead of bringing the complexity in the bank system, because there you don't get through.
Yeah, just to add on to that, I mean, in the VAT system, you know, at every stage of value add, so the VAT applies at every stage of production. And then firms can claim import tax, you know, and they have to pay output tax. And they have to do that at every stage. Now, if you've got luxury goods that, let's say, are somehow in the middle of that, now you're claiming at one rate, but you're paying at a different rate, and then suddenly people want to pretend that a lot of their inputs are actually luxury items so that they can claim at higher rates. And so the potential for complexity and administrative problems is very high. Whereas what we've been saying is that, and what the Davis Tax Committee, they did research on this and said, they don't think we should do the luxury VAT. We already have an ad valorem excise duty. And that ad valorem excise duty ignores the whole production chain and then just looks right at the end. And then right at the end, as the product leaves the factory, they tax it once. And they just tax it an additional amount, which is the 7%. So in effect, this budget, we did a big increase in the tax on luxury goods. Because at that one point, we've increased the tax that ad valorem XRGT. And the Davis Tax Committee recommend, and they say, don't try to play around with this luxury VAT where you have to do it at all these different points in production. Stick to the ad valorem XRGT when it's once at the end, and then pay a higher rate there. And that's what we've done. And you can see on the list of ad valorem XRGTs, it's golf carts, video games, golf balls, you know, and sound recording, monitors, that sort of thing. So it's, you know, we think that's a much better way of approaching a higher burden on luxury
vehicles. Order. Order. And please proceed. You are busy with serious matters. Please proceed.
Okay. Say thank you, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Member, for the discussion. So basically then, the issue about having a multiple rate is not advisable in the bank system because of those problems that it creates. And what then we had done was then to say, using the current list of ad valorem items that we have, we have increased the ad valorem duty on those from 7% to 9%. And then also we have increased the cap on motor vehicles, ad valorem on motor vehicles, from 25% to 30%. And here, Chair, I must just say, basically in terms of that ad valorem list that we have just referred to, motor vehicle fee is an important feature from a revenue generation point of view. Basically, motor vehicles is the main contributor of the ad valorem excise revenue. So the other items that are on the list, from a revenue point of view, they don't contribute much to the ad valorem revenue. It's motor vehicles that contribute a lot.
Is it possible, if you can't do it now, send it to us to give that breakdown. What is the revenue you get receiving from this?
Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. we can
the reason I'm asking this, honourable members, we must go to our constituencies and explain this in simple English.
Okay.
Yes. They are not all economists. And you must explain it in a way that they understand it. So unpack it to us, please.
Okay.
That will assist the committee members. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And so basically then the way the ad valorem excise duty was administered in terms of motor vehicles was that the maximum ad valorem was 25%. So we have increased that to 30%. And basically to just make a point to say that the value added tax is imposed on top of the ad valorem. So basically, in essence, in terms of if you look at the effective tax rate, then it's much
24%.
It's much, much higher.
24%.
Okay. And then again, there was an increase on the estate duty rate to also 25% on estates above 30 million.
Which slide are you now?
I'm on slide 18. Okay, and then yeah, the list we have spoken about of ad valorem excise duty products is quite a limited list. It has been reduced over the years because again, products over time they cease to be luxury items. Yes. Okay. First of all, just remind you about cell phones. So, yeah. And then the next slide, looking at zero rating to mitigate the impact of the of VAT. Just to say that basically the increase of the VAT rate from 14% to 15% will affect the cost of living for all households, considering that VAT is a broad-based tax instrument, and also to look at mitigating the impact on the poor. We currently, in terms of the system, before the current amendment,
We have like 19 food items that are zero rated, and that basket of food items was introduced in the VAT in 1993 and 1994, just at the early days of the VAT system, basically in recognition of what the poor consume, and also as a means of providing relief to the poor when the VAT was introduced to zero rate the 19 food items. And then also later on, paraffin was also zero rated. I think it was around 2000. It was zero rated. And then again, what was done in the budget was to provide for above inflation increase in social grants in the February budget. The World Bank and the local academics, they did a lot of studies to look at the impact of VAT on the poor in terms of looking at whether the VAT system impacts negatively on the poor, and what they have concluded was that because of this 19 food items that are zero rated in the VAT system, and those food items are mostly consumed by the poor, that provides the cushion for the poor. So the impact of VAT on the poor is not as regressive as was originally thought. And then again, just to say that the zero rating assists the poor, but is not an effective tool in terms of reducing inequality. Again, there are better instruments in terms of the targeted, let's say, for example, on the expenditure side, that can be used. I mean, the typical example is the issue about the social grant and all of that, because those are targeted to individual households that are poor and all of that. So that is a better mechanism to provide relief to poor households, unlike through the VAT system, because once you provide zero rating through the VAT system, even, let's say, for example, as a high-income person will go to your shop and buy an item that is zero-rated. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, that person will benefit from the zero rating. So that instrument is not specifically targeted to the poor. It's a general sort of like relief that is provided. That's why we say the VAT system itself is not a good instrument if you want to deal with inequality or redistributive issues of the debt system. Rather look at the expenditure side, because you can maybe through a means test or all of that target the individuals that you want to provide support to. Okay, so I'll try to go through this very quickly. Just to say that it was no surprise then, sort of like the increase to the debt. There was quite a lot of opposition from NGOs and everybody else, considering again that that was done in the context of also increasing the fuel levies and all of that. So the Standing Committee on Finance and the Select Committee on Finance had joint hearing, where basically the stakeholders came to raise their concerns about the impact of the increase on the poor. And just to say that from all of those engagements, the Minister of Finance appointed a panel of experts to basically then look at the current list of 19 food items to look at whether it should be reviewed, because it was put in the VAT system in 1993 and 1994, so that's quite a long time ago. So just to look at whether that basket of 19 food items, is it still sort of relevant in terms of representing the consumption patterns of the poor. And also look at what additional items should be included in zero rating to provide relief to poor households, and then also to look at other measures that government can look at in terms of providing relief to poor households. The panel, after it has done its work, provided the minister with their recommendations, and the recommendations basically was for the zero rating of white bread, bread flour and cake flour, sanitary products, school uniform and nappies. And it is further recommended that government should look at providing free sanitary towels to the poor. And also the issue about the zero rating of school uniform, to say that that maybe cannot be done sort of like immediately, maybe further work needs to be done to look at making sure that if you are going to zero rate school uniform, you are quite clear of what school uniform is, because, you know, a white shirt can be, you know, used as part of school uniform, but a white shirt, how is it different from a white shirt that I am wearing right now? So there's those issues to say that they need to be sort of like a proper investigation in terms of identifying what school uniform is, and if then that is possible, then consider zero rating of school uniform. And one important issue that the panel suggested in the report was that further work needs to be done to ensure that the benefits of zero rating accrues to consumers and not captured by producers. Because again, you know, once you introduce zero rating, there's no guarantee that the producers will pass through the benefits to consumers. So, but then again, the question is what levers we have as government, because we're not working with administered prices. So in a sense, there's not really much that government can do, because we don't have like administered prices. And also just looking at the issue about the current expenditure programs that are there, the panel recommended that they need further strengthening, like the school National School Nutrition Program, and also the current grant system that is there, to look at how that can be further enhanced. So in terms of then the consultation, the independent panel, they gave the minister the report on the 6th of August, and then also from the Treasury side, we published the report on the 10th of August for public comments. We gave the public up until the 31st of August to provide comments. And then also the standing committee also had engagement on the report with the panel and then the stakeholders. And from the comments that we received as Treasury, we received about 316 written submissions and over 60,000 comments through petitions. In essence, basically, people were supporting the recommendations of the panel, but they also were looking for additional zero rating to be included in the or to be considered. So, in terms of the additional requests for zero rating in the comments, basically, the next slide just shows the list of the items that people wanted us to consider for zero rating. Anything? Okay. And then I must just say, basically, like, I mean, all these items, if one were to consider it, basically one would just wipe out the best base. So from a revenue point of view, all of these items, if they were to be zero rated, would wipe out the best base. SSS, we have already said that that the best system is quite an efficient system to raise revenue because of broad base. And then again, zero rating complicates the best system and opens up the system for greater fraud and the complexity that we have just talked about. From a distributional point of view, as we have already indicated, that the VAT system is quite a blunt tool to use to assist the poor. I think there are better instruments that one can use, because again, once you zero rate, it's a general benefit that accrues to everybody, And then again, in terms of the looking at the spending capacity, the high incomes are the ones who have more money to spend, and basically then the benefit accrues to them if you have the more zero-rated items.
Okay, just to get, so now we've in effect we've got to the MTBPS, the medium-term budget policy statement. I mean, that statement came out with very difficult revenue figures once again. We had a 49 billion shortfall for last year. The estimate for this year, for 2018-19, was now going to be 27 billion below what we had projected at the time of the budget in February. No. So it's a very large decrease in revenues again. Just to also highlight that we're at a very different position to 1994. I mean, the total debt to GDP, gross debt to GDP, in terms of 2008 in the financial crisis was 26%, but now we're sitting at 55%. So the debt to GDP has been increasing markedly over the last few years, and we're not in a position where we are able to let it continue to creep up. Because of that, and also additional large expenditure pressures, we've had the higher than budgeted wage increases, we needed potential capital injections for the SOEs, there is a dire need for greater infrastructure spend as well as social expenditure programs such as NHI. You know, the more we zero rate, we will reduce revenues. And if you reduce revenues, you either need to then cut expenditure or have higher borrowing. And we feel that we're getting to the limit of increasing the borrowing. So from the MTBPS, the announcement made by the minister was that we could only do a couple of the proposals from the independent panel. So it is proposed that three of the six items will be zero-rated. White bread flour, cake flour, and sanitary pads would be zero-rated from 1 April 2019, which has been included in the version of the bill. It is also proposed that the free provision of sanitary products be implemented. So 79 million was immediately allocated in the NTBPS to provide for that free provision. That is on top of there are provincial efforts to provide free sanitary products that have been ongoing, and I think it goes to KZN and Karting. There has been a free provision of sanitary products. So this is on top of those previous programs. And then it was stated that further work needs to be done to identify expenditure programs which would directly target and help those on lower incomes. And just to carry on, I mean, the last slide is on the last slide of the pack is on the increase in the general fuel levy and the RAF levy. The general levy, fuel levy increase will give us around 1.2 billion, which isn't a lot out of the 36 billion, but it's because we assume an inflationary increase. So a 17 cents per litre increase in the fuel levy would have in effect been revenue neutral for us. The big increase was also in the 50 cents per litre on the road accident fund. The fiscal position in the road accident fund is dire, to be honest. And that is the big thing we need to deal with in the next few years. And then the summary of the race call is at the end, so you can go through all the different sources. And if there are any questions on those, we are happy to answer them. That concludes our presentation, Chair, but we're obviously happy to answer any questions on it.
Ms. Can we go to the other two bills? It's a bit shorter. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to deal with the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill, and Seth will be dealing with the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill. As you have said earlier, the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill and Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill were published for public comment on the 16th of July, and we had 30 days for comments, and we had public hearings in the Standing Committee on Finance. We also held workshops. Even though the bill contains, if you look at slide 3, the bill had a lot of proposals. However, there were four big ticket items that we're going to discuss that were the point of contention in the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill, whereby we had to have meetings and the Standing Committee on Finance on the 2nd of October. The representatives went to Treasury again on the 2nd of October to meet with us together with the stakeholders so that we can give a way forward as to those four biggest items. And then on the 17th of October, we again presented to the Standing Committee just before the bill was introduced on the 24th of October. This is how we're going to change the bill so as to look at the proposed solution to the problem. So in this House today, we're going to discuss the four issues that were the point of contention on the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill. That you received most of the comments and we had most meetings on. Okay, the first issue refers to the tax treatment of amounts received or are accrued to portfolios of collective investment schemes. In this proposal, we were trying to introduce an anti-avoidance measure whereby we limit the trading by the collective investment scheme. And we made a proposal in the draft bill that was published for public comment in July. However, when we're having public hearings in Parliament, the assessor, which is the representative of the collective investment scheme, said that the limitation measure that we are trying to introduce into the bill is too stringent. It's like they were saying that we are throwing away the baby with the bathwater and we're going to kill the industry. So what they requested is that we look in this year, we remove the proposal in the bill, and in this year we look at the ways. We have a work study group that is, it will consist of the industry, treasury, and also the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, because now there is a Twin Peaks bill, they are looking at the market conduct. So we're going to look at all the issues regarding admin, issues regarding anti-avoidance measures, before we can make a proposal in the budget. So what we agreed is that... Yes. So what happened is that now, we said we're going to remove the proposed amendment in the TLEP 2018. And then in the 2019 legislative cycle, maybe we're going to look at the work group. So we will have a work group consisting of these institutions so that we can look at ways to come. Everyone agrees there is abuse. However, the anti-avoidance measure that we are bringing is too stringent, so that we can try and look at ways to limit abuse. So that said, even though it is removed in the 2018 TLEP, it's not totally removed because we still want to introduce a measure, but we're going to have a task team that will look at this and then we'll come out with the proposal, maybe 2019 or 2020 budget cycle. That is the proposal we are having. And
which page is that?
We are on slide 7.
No, I just want to highlight.
Yeah. So, as we have said that we are removing it for now, and then we're going to look at it. It can be considered in the 2019 legislative cycle. But I think we're going to have a work study group because now we're starting to convene meetings with the interested so that we can have a work study on this, and then we can come up with a proposal.
I just want to go back to page 7, revised proposed option. Is that what you address?
Yes.
Okay.
So that is the first proposal that we had a lot of meetings on, and there were issues. The second one is the review of the venture capital company rules. Currently, the Income Tax Act has got incentives that we introduced in 2018 to assist small business funding. And since we introduced this incentive, is that if you are an investor in a venture capital company, then you'll get a deduction. So that because we wanted the investors in a venture capital company, thereby invest in a qualifying company, which is a small business or a junior mining operation company, and then they get a deduction because we wanted to fund small business companies. So since the introduction in 2008, there are currently 134 approved VCCs. And then because of anti-abuse measures, two of the VCCs have been withdrawn. So what happened is that just before the budget, there were newspaper articles and also advertisements in the website that just before the 2018 budget that VCCs, you can help reduce your tax and all that. So in the 2018 budget proposal, we put a provision, a proposal to say that we're going to try and close abuse of the venture capital company schemes. So we put that proposal in the budget. And then in the TLEV that was introduced, that was published for public comment, we had proposal that is to limit the abuse of the DCC regime. The first one was the limitation of the issue of different classes of shares, and the second one was the limitation of the abuse of the trading between investor and the DCC. So we had those proposals in the TLEV, that draft TLEV that was published for public comment in July. And then taxpayers, there were a series of meetings that were held, and then on the 14th of September we had another meeting with taxpayers, whereby they were telling us that our proposed measures are too strict. We're going to kill the VCC industry. So, but they understand that there are abusive schemes that are happening within the VCC regime. So, also in the slide following that is slide 8, the revised proposed options. So there, we introduced a test to say that no shareholder in a VCC may have shares in a qualifying company more than 20%, so as to limit the abuse, so 20-20-20-20. And then we said that this measure, if in order to grandfather those that are already having shares in a VCC, we said that this measure will apply on the shares issued by the VCC after the bill has been tabled. Because taxpayers were saying that when the VCC was first introduced in 2008, we entered into this scheme, we're not trying to be abusive. So if you change the rules now, you're going to be caught. We said, okay, if you are already in those class of shares that you've issued before the bill is introduced on 24 October, then this new rule will apply on any shares issued after the bill has been introduced on 24 October. So that's what we are proposing. Even the trading requirement rules, we said that they'll apply on the trading after 24 October 2018, so that if you are already doing it, you are not caught. But those who are doing it after 24 October 2018, they'll be caught by the new rules. Because they were saying that when we're doing it, we applied for SARS ruling and we're not even abusive. Though maybe that we're abusive, did not even apply for SARS ruling. So we actually said we understand your issue. The laws will apply on any trading activities and any shares that are issued after 24 October 2018. The third amendment that we had in the TLEV was amendments to the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Royalty Act. There, what happens is that when we introduced the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Royalty Act, we said that royalties will not apply to gross sales, and then gross sales will include, you have to deduct the gross sales from the amount of royalties. So gross sales include transport, insurance, and handling costs. So at issue was that now, if you've got what will go to the gross sales, because you say gross sales minus this, and then the royalty will be applied on the amount after deducting all those expenses. So what happens is that the current wording of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Royalty Act has the following words, without regard to expenditure incurred. And the word without regard created a problem for both SARS and the taxpayers, because the issue was that if now there is an invoice, and that invoice does not necessarily have the transport and handling costs, and maybe you pay the transport and handling costs separately. So now the problem is that if that invoice does not have, must you deduct or not deduct? So that was the issue, and there were court cases in this regard. So we said, if the taxpayer has incurred transport and handling costs, even though they, as long as they've got proof that they've incurred the transport and handling costs, they are allowed to deduct from gross sales. So we said we're going to make changes to the bill by saying that after deducting expenditure actually incurred, so that it is clear. As you have got proof that you've incurred that expenditure, even if it's different invoice from the gross sales, you are allowed to deduct that expenditure. That is the issue. The last one that was the lot of contention on was clarification of the tax treatment of doubtful debts. What happens is that the currently, the Income Tax Act did not have a criteria for the tax treatment for doubtful debts, and SARS will apply a discretion. So the discretion will range up to 100%. So last year, remember, you can claim doubtful debt allowances, but when you write off the debt, you still claim. So that was the allowance that the taxpayers were complaining about. So what happened is that last year, we set laws in the legislation to say if you are a bank, you are allowed to claim up to 25, 40, and 85. But 85% is based on Reserve Bank Regulation 67, because the banks are regulated by the Reserve Bank. So last year we did it for banks. And then this year we said we're going to do it for non-bank lenders and other taxpayers. So in the draft bill that was published for public comment, we had only 25 and 40, and we did not have another one. So the taxpayers complained, said that banks are treated differently than them and all that. But they said the reason why banks are treated differently is that they are regulated, 85%, they are regulated by the Reserve Bank. In your scenario, and we are referring to Regulation 67 of the Reserve Bank, in your scenario, you are not regulated as banks. So it will be difficult for us to have the same treatment as banks because you are not regulated and you are not no capital stringent provisions are imposed to you by the Reserve Bank. So what happened is that we said, okay, in order to solve the problem, we're going to have 25% and 40, but any taxpayer requiring from 40 up to 85%, they must apply to SARS for a directive. That you cannot just get the 85%, because even the banks don't get it, they get it based on Regulation 57. So here you must apply to SARS in order to get a directive for up to 85%. And we set out the rules that you'll qualify for the directive, and then when you apply to SARS, this is what information you have to give to SARS for the directive. So based on the meeting and the which we had with the taxpayers and the Standing Committee on Finance, they accepted our proposed revised solutions to the problem. Thank you.
Good Chair, I'll keep mine very brief. Our contentious issues were not quite as contentious as all that, so we had fewer meetings. Our meeting was finished on the 5th of September. Apologies, there's a typo on the slide, but it's the 6th of September. And the two key issues that we got the most comments on were around the ability to correct VAT invoices and the deregistration of tax non-compliant tax practitioners. Now, on the correction of VAT invoices, everyone agreed that this was a wonderful idea, but we've got, sorry, we're on the
wrong group.
It's the same document.
It's the same document. Page 12.
That's correct.
Page 12?
Yep.
It just carries on because why? It forms a package. That's why, that's the reason.
Yes.
You got it?
Yes.
Sure. Thank you, Franz.
All right. So I've moved on to, I think it's slide 12 is in the document you've got now. That gives you the two key issues. And I'm now going on to clarifications. That's slide 13.
Yeah.
So everyone agreed that this was a great thing because as it stands at the moment, if I get an invoice that, say, has my address wrong on it, I can't use that invoice to claim a VAT refund as a business, assuming I was a business. And there's some other errors that essentially mean I can't use this document. But the question is, well, what do I do with that then? And it's been something we've tried to address through interpretation through the years, but people have never been entirely satisfied with it. So we've finally proposed a legislative amendment to make it clear that you can correct this invoice, and that's what we put on the table. And what then happened was we had a huge number of technical debates turning on what the definition of a tax invoice was. In the original proposal, we said you need to cancel the invoice and issue a new invoice, and some people said, no, our accounting systems can't do that, we've got to do it in a different way. So in the end, we said, okay, fine, let's keep this as simple as possible. You need to correct the invoice. How you correct it is up to however your accounting system works, as long as you maintain a proper audit trail so that SARS can follow how you corrected it. You've got to do it within 21 days of the correction being requested, and that correction doesn't impact on when the supply took place, because because they're not two documents.
They must submit it to you, the supporting documentation.
No, they retain it, and if we need it, we can look at it.
What?
Because just think about it, I mean, there are going to be a lot of these corrections happening out there, and that's why the audit trail is important, so that we can make sure that the documents... what we don't want is two invoices for the same supply, because then I can claim my VAT input twice, or my refund twice. And that's why it's important that you have an audit trail, so that we can make sure that there isn't that duplication, and that is why it's also important that we made it clear that the so-called time of supply, the date of the transaction, doesn't change either. Because again, you don't want to move the transaction around depending on when the document was issued. It is the original transaction. So with those changes, to keep it as simple as possible, people seem to be quite happy with what we've put on the table, and so we move on. The second one is one that I suspect people are still not entirely happy with, but we think is necessary. We have a situation where we have some fairly substantial tax debts and tax returns outstanding from tax practitioners. Now, these are the people that are supposed to be helping us to complete our tax returns, but they can't keep the only order, and they can't pay their own tax debt. So it seems a little odd that they're still out there advising clients and they can't even keep their own affairs in order. So this was in fact a proposal from the industry, or at least a segment of it, and it seemed like a good one, and so it flowed through into the budget proposals and it was duly made. And originally we said, if you are for a continuous or recurrent basis non-compliant for 3 months out of 6, you will be notified to correct your affairs. If you don't correct them, you'll be deregistered. And the pushback there was people were saying, well, hang on, that's a bit too short, and what do you mean by continuous or regular? So we've simplified it. We've said over a 12-month period, you have been non-compliant for a total period of 6 months. So we just look at the periods for which you're non-compliant. We add them up. If it comes to 6 months, we send you a notification. We say, you now have the opportunity to do one of two things, and here's another change. One, you can demonstrate that you were in fact compliant. Maybe we've misfiled your return or something happened. You can demonstrate that to us, no problem. Or, again, you can correct the non-compliance. If you don't do either of those two things, you will be deregistered. So there's a fair process now. People are notified. They have an opportunity to come back to us and state their case. If the non-compliance remains, they are deregistered. And they then need to get their affairs in order.
Honourable members, we still remember in 2016 when we dealt with the financial sector regulation law. The thing also came up. Right off a month is the presentation.
Yes.
This point, precise point. Thank you.
So
is there a typo then? No, wait, let me finish. It's nearly finished. Then
so
we come.
There's a typo error then.
Where?
Deregistration of tax, non-compliant tax practitioners. So we take away the first tax. It must really just read deregistration of non-compliant tax practitioners.
In answer to that question, it's tax non-compliance that gets you out. There may be other non-compliance that you're guilty of. We would not necessarily be aware of it. That's why it's tax non-compliance. Tax practitioners. So it does look a bit odd, but
it looks all
different.
Remember, English is going with the ship. Right, 14, we're going to... are you done? Are you done?
And the
amendment, have you... The amendment on the review of the of the VAT?
Chair, it's a little difficult for me to speak to it, because after all it was the standing committee that proposed it. But essentially what happened there was the existing clause...
Yes.
That is correct. So essentially what the standing committee...
Sorry, the reason I'm doing this, it must be captured in a minute. That's the reason.
Thank you, Chair. So it's page 10 of the actual B39-2018.
Remember, this is the bill, the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill, B39B of 2018, page 10, section 28. Review. You've got it? Thank you. Please proceed.
So essentially what happened there was the previous clause 28 as it was then was renumbered as 29, and the new clause 28 was introduced by the Standing Committee. And essentially what this does is it's a very strong reminder to the minister and a future set of committees that they should be reviewing the legislation. And essentially all it provides for is that in 3 years' time, from the 1st of April 2018, the minister needs to review the increase from 14 to 15%, having regard to an evaluation of its impact on revenue collection and its impact on the poor, and then table a report by no later than the 30th of June 2021. So that's all it's driving at. It's a strong reminder that we need to do our jobs as we should do.
Now, there's a reason I did this, because we must be consistent. Going back to our report on the fiscal framework and revenue proposal, 6 March 2018, page 37. Here it is. And the Treasury answers, report to us on their engagements with stakeholders regarding the VAT. The VAT increase. Yes. So the comment is still consistent. The only difference is it's now over 3 years. We said over 2 years, it's now 3 years. Why? Because of the fiscal position South Africa is finding itself in. The debtor, as the minister named it, Tito Mboweni, when he tabled the MTPBS. You must always look at the bigger picture and go back to your resolutions you took to go forward. Thank you for these three presentations. All the members, it will also help and assist you to read the VAT panel's summary. This is actually a summary. The actual report is quite thick. Thank you, Zolani, for sending it to us. That is part of our homework. My first question, is it possible for Treasury to table these tax laws amendment bills, the three, earlier than the 24th of October when the MTPBS is tabled? Is it possible to bring it forward, to give more space? Because this question we're asking year after year. Yes. Members, questions to the team? I just want to get to my place here. Hold on, Martha Shipping. Anyone else? Honorable Eshak? Honorable Shivangu? In that order?
No. Well, thanks, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. At least it gives direction as to which the direction that the country is taking and what is happening in terms of our budget. Now, let me start with the presentation on the tax, the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill and Tax Administration Laws. On the four issues that you said were raised even during the consultation process, with regard to the tax treatment of amounts received by or accrued to portfolios of collective investment schemes and the review of venture capital company rules, the only reason and tangible reason that you said you are withdrawing the proposal is based on the stringent measures that were introduced. Now, and you further alluded to the fact that there would be a research and then it's not that you are totally withdrawing. Now, I am not getting a sense that if stakeholders come to the issue of saying these are stringent measures, and still you intend to introduce stringent measures in the future, what is it that debars you at the current moment to continue with the stringent measures if they are meant to protect consumers? Now, the I am very gentle, forgive me for the comments that I'm going to make. You know, we went to SARS as a committee, and there was issue around the VAT return, and it was with regard to the capacity in SARS, and that they are delaying that because they wanted to, the returns of people, because they wanted to, you know, to have more money and all that. Now, I am raising this issue on the capacity of SARS, that it, because of their own wrongdoing, it is then having a bearing on the poor. And I will explain why I'm saying so. Chairperson, we have raised the issue of illicit outflows quite repeatedly.
In the report of March, yes.
Yes. And SARS is mum about it. Now, when you look at the luxury, the reason that they give on this ad valorem and the luxury tax, or what do they call it? Yeah. Now, they were able to come to a study and say, no, let's increase VAT, which will have an impact on the poor. And they were able to calculate how much they will gain out of the 1%. But they are coming with technicalities when they go to tax the rich. They don't give us a picture like you requested of saying, in the event we introduce this, is it, do you call it luxury or what? Luxury tax. Or it's on page. What? No, no. That tax that you spoke about, where was that? The Mura Motors. Yeah, okay. No, no. Yeah. You know, the study that you spoke about on the commission that was established looking into the introduction of this luxury tax and goods. Yes. Now, the luxury bed. Yes. Now, you say you are not coming clear why you don't present to this committee a study that said, in the event we introduce luxury bed, this is the outcome that we may get. But you were able to calculate it with the VAT increase. As you explained, you say the general tax, and you said the administration would be cumbersome. It is still cumbersome for SARS just to deal with collection of tax. Simple as it is in your view, they are unable to deal with it. It's that simple for that matter. Because we are in this mess because of tax collection. We are having this 27 billion shortfall because of the collection in SARS. Now, here we are faced with a situation where you are playing with words and you are becoming technical. You can't introduce luxury tax, but you quickly introduce the VAT tax. We have a position as the ruling party on the VAT tax. Thanks for the secular. reflection of the ANC position on that. I know it, but I will not spell it out. I'm saying this thing precisely because if it comes to, you know, corporate tax, where you've got to take the rich, you are very doubtful in doing so, but instead of, when you come to issues of taxing the poor, you are quick to come to a conclusion. And I'm a little bit disturbed by that. Thanks very much.
I think what Treasury itself must do, referring to that specific page in the presentation where they address this matter, to come up, if there are studies being done, give us that in-depth information as well, that we get a better picture of the whole issue. Because I'm coming again to the point, we must go and account to people outside about these issues. They are very well educated because they listen to the radio, they listen to TV programs, etc. Especially when you address sectoral meetings, business people, etc. Even farmers, they are becoming economists. Even upcoming farmers are becoming economists. Yes. So if you could do that for us, to go deeper into it, and you can forward it to our secretariat, that will assist the committee a lot. Honorable Isak, and then Honorable Shabam,
and then
Honorable Gaira. So thank you.
My colleague Honorable Motor Shipping has somewhat covered quite a bit in terms of what I wanted to allude to, but nevertheless, there is these issues, and I think it was covered pretty well regarding the issues regarding the road accident fund, the fuel levies, etc., etc., and I respect that. Now, surely National Treasury is talking to the administration and to government and making suggestions ongoing. And I'm confident that there might have been strong suggestions by National Treasury to government regarding expenditure cuts due to the scenario that we're facing. Now, I'm apt to believe, and I say this with due respect, that why does it seem that sometimes, or most of the time, what you are saying to government as National Treasury is just not being bought, not being made sense to? That, look, we have, this is our expenses, and if we don't begin to cut some of these expenses, then we are going to have huge shortfalls in revenue income and not be able to carry out the mandate in terms of service delivery and infrastructure development, etc., education. So at what point in time, or how else do or does one convince government that certain expenditure has to be cut if we are to become financially viable? Because, Chairperson, you would understand that in my previous readings of what I've read in the newspapers, with the tax refunds, that the 20 billion odd rand tax refunds I think we discussed in the past. Now, if I look and common sense tells me that in this financial year, what you expect to receive in the increase of VAT, and what you must and are committed to pay out in terms of output that's claimed, or input that's claimed, it's gonna negate it, 20 billion, 20 billion. So really speaking, I mean, let's be honest and practical about this, as ordinary South Africans. What big deal is this 15% VAT increase, when it's not going to do anything to the fiscus as such, except just to contend with covering certain expenses like the VAT inputs? And, of course, you know, coming from a motor dealership background, common sense tells me that if I buy a motor cover for 1 million rand, and I consider that 15%, I consider the luxury tax of 9% ad valorem, that takes me, 24%? if I put in another 2% for carbon tax emissions on vehicles above 500 or 750,000, my memory serves me correctly. So if I buy a vehicle for R1 million, effectively 26-27% of that R1 million is going towards tax. I'm only actually paying 750,000 for that vehicle. 250,000 over tax. So, again, are you considering what this is doing to the motor industry? Because the motor industry plays a huge role in this country's economy and across the supply chain process. So, again, is this creating an incentive for the economy to go forward? Or shall we then just begin to look at importing vehicles? That's one question I wanted to raise. And then, Chairperson, there was the last issue, which I got here earlier. You mentioned in the slide on the presentation of the rates amendment proposed, and you talk under the slide 15, zero rating will mitigate the impact on the poor. And then you go on in bullet 2, section 2, above inflation increases in social grants. Now, I say to you with due respect again, after everything I've heard this morning, where are we going to find these monies? Where are we going to raise this revenue to give above inflation social grants? I just want to leave it there for now. Thank you, Chair.
We dealt with that matter when we had our public hearings on the revised and proposed fiscal framework of the ESSEC, and it's captured in the revised fiscal framework report as well. It brings us back to the serious matter to rebuild SARS. Because money was taken, about 20 billion, from the VAT funding to pay back VAT funds that wasn't paid at the correct time. That's why this exercise to rebuild SARS is crucial to correct all the wrongs that was done. Because at the end of the day, it's the taxpayers that's going to suffer. So that's why we must monitor this rebuilding of SARS. When they come with the national budget next year, February, there must be a report. Where are they now? The question I asked to the acting SARS commissioner during the briefing by the Minister of Finance on the 25th of October. That progress report must come in February next year. On Bishop Angu and then on Bulgaria.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also accept the presentation. My first question would be, because most of the questions are going to be more or less the same, how are you going to prevent money collected from the taxpayers from ending in the wrong hands? Do you have measures in place, or are you still going to collect for yourself? And then, number two, how do you differentiate between luxury and non-luxury items? A car can be a luxury item to Mr. De Beers, and to me it can be a need. Then this is the brotherly advice. Why don't you advise the minister in terms of making staple food a zero rated, not flour? Poor people cannot afford flour, and it also needs ingredients in order to be consumable. Then last, on draft tax administration law amendment bill, how fast are are you dealing with the matter, because there is deregistration of taxman as online tax practitioner. Because there are non-compliant tax practitioners who mislead our taxpayers by saying we are connected, in fact we'll help you even if you submit late, and as a result those taxpayers find themselves on the wrong side of the law. Thank you.
Gaila.
Let me also welcome the presentation. I think my colleagues have taken most of the items that I wanted to speak to. But however, can you protect me, Chairperson? This is going to cloud.
Father, you are protected.
This is going to cloud me. What do I do? Member
Focus on Bulgaria's question. Don't interrupt him. Thank you.
It seems that poor people are the softest parent. I agree with what my colleague is saying. But to raise money, go for the poor. Must also remember the zero rated. Everybody benefits from it. Everybody benefits from the zero rated. So it seems that your quickest target is the poor. Yeah, in South Africa, you've got super rich people. Super rich people. Which are just getting everything for granted. In other words, what we are saying is that the poor must remain poor, stay there, poor. Don't move out of that bracket. Don't move at all. Are there any plans to tax the super rich? Tax the assets? Well, I remember once I was in the newspaper, I won't mention the name, where a super rich person owned millions of cars, and about more than 50% was written off, more than 50%. Now you take that in comparison with the poor, I'm talking of the real poor, they're imagining the small businesses. Some of them, old stars, they are closed up by stars. No more. Yes. Yeah, you talk at a high level as though you are helping. You are not helping. You go down there. Your officials down at your branches don't do what you are saying. So there is that problem in South Africa that is created by stars. It's created. It's destroyed that. Very small SMEs that the government says we want to improve. So there is that treatment, and if you go, the people there got that feeling that they are not well treated. It's the truth of the matter, whether you like it. Some of those very poor ones are not being paid in time. Instead of having an official from SARS who goes to them and say, okay, you're owed by Department of so much by Department of Education, how do we plan that you repay your taxes? Most of them are closed down. Most of them have died. Old money by the government on one side. SARS is not the least interested person. There's a lot I can give you. Names of people who died were destroyed because of the systems that we have that don't talk. Our systems don't talk to each other, Chairperson. That's our first problem. So our systems are not helping them. Very poor people. So I think you must just do a proper research. What is happening in South Africa? Do a proper research. We are here to assist our people. Are we assisting them? No. Now, I want to talk on page 10, the tax treatment for doubtful debt. This also affects the super rich, that people down there who are owed that money but cannot pay that because of credit reasons are treated in such an unfair manner. So you can talk to us, what are you doing? But don't talk about the level where you are. Talk about your branches at the bottom. That's where the problem is, where these people are, right at the bottom. We have a major problem there. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. We must acknowledge that there are steps taken to correct what went wrong in us. We must acknowledge it. And that's why I made the remark that in February, when the national budget is tabled, that we will have to get a progress report from SARS. I also turn members' attention to the report of the Auditor General that was released last week. Government is losing billions and billions of land. And that's why I posed the question to this express lady on Friday, what money can you recover that was lost because of the incorrect contract that was signed? And every government department will have to zoom into that. What money can be recovered that was lost? Then this review of that becomes very important. That SARS get what is owed to them. I'll elaborate a bit further. Over to the team.
Thank you, honorable members. I'll deal with the Chilean issues. Christian and Paul will deal with best interest, and France will deal with all the SARS difficult questions.
There's work in progress.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Your first question that you asked, is it possible for NT to take in earlier than 24 October? With regard to the rates bill, which is published on the government day, on the budget day, and the rates are effective maybe 1 March or 1 April, that can be tabled earlier. Because when we publish the rates bill, or when the minister does the announcement, the date is already in place. So, and then as we've got something in the law to say, from the date of the announcement up to 12 months, the rate is effective, subject to Parliament passing the legislation. With regard to the rates bill, that can be done earlier. However, with regard to the Debt Administration Laws Amendment Bill and Taxation Laws Amendment Bill, this requires a lot of consultation. From the budget proposal to the publishing of the bill for public comments, we have to have meetings and consult. And then we publish the bill for public comments for 30 days. That's when we receive those comments to say the proposal are stringent review. Hence now we're having the revised proposed options by 2nd of October and 17th October. Because that requires a lot of consultation there, because those are difficult anti-avoidance measures. Hence every year we will say, for example, last year we made provisions and then taxpayers say they are not working or maybe we are wrong here. And then we'll revise the provisions that we've made in the next budget cycle. So with regard to the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill and the Debt Administration Laws Amendment Bill, that requires further consultation and more meetings. Yes. But with regard to the rates bill, it can be possible. The second question that you asked, like the CIS Collective Investment Schemes, the withdrawal. When we are saying we are withdrawing now, we are saying that we mean that we concede to say maybe the proposal is too stringent. And then hence now we said we require more consultation on the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill. So we are saying now before we come with the proposal, we're going to have a study, a work study on this. And the work study, we're going to come with revised proposed solution. For instance, when we're having the revised proposed solution, it's not like everybody likes them, but we need to have measures to protect the abuse or to cover the abuse in that area. So what you're going to do on the collective investment scheme is to have a working group on it. And then after the working group, government will decide with the proposals to put in the bill. But we want consultation first before we can have the amendment in the bill. And then on the venture capital companies, we have not taken away the proposal. But the consultation process has allowed us to have proposals that are there, but the proposal, the effective date, so we are grandfathering maybe the shares that are issued before we made the proposal, so that if you've already entered into a trading or already entered into a BCC regime, seeing that the legislation is correct. So the proposal will come in respect of shares issued after 24 October 2018. So that was the, hence we did the consultation, that was the compromise we had on that. And then we're saying that even the trading requirements will come after 24 October 2018 to say that will come on the date of the after the date of the introduction of the bill, when everybody is aware. So on the CIS, we withdrew the proposal, but it's coming back. Maybe the proposed solution will be better, but it's not like they will shoot everyone. That is it. And then I think everything else relates to the zero rating and the TALAB issues. But on the SMMEs, we want to say that from the policy measure, government have made measures for the tax treatment of SMMEs to have small business taxation, which is very less stringent and very easy to apply than other taxes. And I want to say that when the Minister of Small Business was introduced, SARS, Treasury and the small business, there was a presentation to say how do we assist small businesses, but France will elaborate on the matter regarding branches.
Thanks, Shaga. Thank you, members, for the questions. The first one, I think, on our side was on the luxury VAT, and we've given a bit of a technical answer to that. We'll share the two reports with the committee, the CAS Commission report, which recommended against a luxury VAT, and the Davis Tax Committee report, which also recommended against a luxury VAT. From our view, we think this ad valorem tax is achieving the same objective, but in a much easier way, by taxing those goods only at the end of the production chain, but we'll share that information with you. There were two points on, why aren't you taxing the rich? The poor are a tough target. What are the plans to tax the super rich? So, this VAT decision was not sort of a soft target. It was not an easy decision to make. Almost, it felt a little bit like it was a last resort for us. Over the last, 5-6 years, we've been increasing taxes on everything else except the poor. Perhaps not on the fuel levy, but on everything else. So, like with the personal income taxes, we increased it by. There were rate increases about 3-4 years ago. We put in a new top higher rate. Those are very big increases for the wealthy in terms of their personal income taxes. The capital gains tax, we've almost doubled the rate at which people pay capital gains tax over the last 5 years. There was the point of corporate taxes. Why not increase the corporate tax? So how do you get money out of a corporate? You either sell it, which we've now got much higher corporate income capital gains tax rates, or you get dividends. We had a very big increase last year in the dividends withholding tax rate from 15% to 20%. That was a very big increase in tax on the rich. Or you get it through wages, and we've had very big increases in wages as well. So all the money that flows from corporates, we've taxed a lot higher in previous years. This year, we have also tried to do much more progressive taxation. We've got, you were talking about the super rich, we've now got the 25% estate duty tax rate on estates above 30 million, which increased from 20%, which was a big one. We've also got this, the high ad valorem tax on these luxury goods. The point on the, I'm just quickly divert to the other question on the vehicles. This higher cap of 30% for the ad valorem excise duty, that comes in at about R1 million, is that correct? So that's only for vehicles at about R1 million. A lot of the local vehicle manufacturers are producing vehicles that are much lower value than that, which then flow into the domestic market. A lot of those high-end vehicles are imported, and they're not produced here. So there's a debate about the impact of local industry for this high value of the cap, because it's mostly high value imported cars. So that's just on the super rich. Going back to the super rich point, we also increased transfer duties. We created a new transfer duty bracket for houses above 10 million. We did that 2 years ago. So now you pay 13% if you were to buy a house that's more than 10 million rand as another sort of proxy wealth tax. And the Davis Tax Committee have done a report on introducing a wealth tax. Their final recommendation from the report was that actually we've got very little to no data on this. So their recommendation is that we start forcing people to include their wealth in their return. You don't tax it initially, you just force them to include their wealth and then we can see what's happening. When Piketty came over, Thomas Piketty, the economist, he's very progressive, he said, you know, you should have a wealth tax of 0.25% just to start, to then get all that information and then we can see. So we are looking at that and it is one of the reports that the Davis Tax Committee has put forward. Just to mention, there's also our colleagues at a carbon tax workshop at the moment, and that in effect would be hitting corporates, but in order to internalize the cost of their pollution. I think we've spoken about the luxury cars, the advice to ministers to make stable food zero rated. I think that was a large part of what we were trying to do here, was to get an independent panel, which is what we did this year. So the minister got these experts, you know, got a professor from the university, he's got lots of different economists, different people from SARS, to then say, what should we do? And that's how they came up with those six items that we put forward. A lot of the, what they said in their report was that a lot of the zero-rated items are already quite well targeted to the poor. So if you were to start zero-rating other things, it wouldn't be as effective, and I think that was what we were trying to say. But it is a debate, and we've had lots of comments and lots of very thick submissions on additional products to zero-rate. I think I've covered most of the points. Do you want to say anything else?
Thank you, Chris. Maybe just to add, I mean, in our the budget document that we produce every year, we have a section that deals with the tax expenditure. That basically gives an indication of how much revenue we are sort of like foregoing by zero rating. And that includes the amount of money that we are currently foregoing with regards to the zero-rated item. Now, having indicated earlier that basically if you have more zero-rating, again, considering that the best instrument or the best system itself is not a or is a blunt instrument in terms of targeting the poor. The issue is that if then you introduce more zero rating, it means then you will be foregoing more revenue. But then because of sort of the expenditure patterns and the more of the benefit will be accruing towards high income households, because just purely based on sort of like the capacity to spend, right? So basically then we will be losing more revenue through the best system, but most of it will not be going to the poor. And I think, just to emphasize the point, that's why even the independent panel, when they look at the submissions from stakeholders about the items to zero rate, when they looked at the consumption patterns in terms of currently, look at the consumption patterns of the poor and all of that, That's why they could only come to six items in terms of where they saw the benefit could accrue. Now the issue is that if then you add more items, it means that you are losing more revenue and you are moving further away from trying to assist the poor in that way. So that's why they could only identify six based on the current consumption patterns. That these six items, if you zero rate them, they could potentially provide relief to the poor. So if you add more, then you won't be assisting the poor. So I think it's that kind of like that issue. So then the issue is that to say, are there other better ways of targeting the poor? And that's basically that's what we've been sort of like saying, to say, instead of doing that through the best system, can we think of ways, maybe on the expenditure side, to target the poor? Because at least from the expenditure side, you are able to identify the beneficiaries and be able to make the necessary relief, unlike having this broad-based relief that you provide to the debt system, because you're going to lose more money and then it will accrue to high-income households.
Front.
Thank you, Chair. So, of course, I'm left with a very difficult question, which is generally here we're dealing with the legislation, and the question is how does that filter through to the ground? And that's, of course, a very difficult question to answer. There were two key issues.
No. I want to assist you. Actually, the acting search commissioner will have to account to Parliament, and that's why, for the third time, I'm making this remark. That must happen in February. And we will engage with the minister. We want that report in the briefing the day after the tabling of the national budget. Yes.
Perhaps I should restate myself then. I should say it's very difficult for me to do it in short notice.
I know.
But just to speak to the two key issues that I heard coming through. The one is tax practitioners that are essentially misleading their clients, that are promising things they cannot deliver. And that was the whole point of creating the mechanism for regulating tax practitioners. Remember, the idea there was not that SARS would regulate them, which is the model that is used in, for example, the United States, but that they would be expected to belong to a what we would call a recognized controlling body. So some kind of professional association that meets criteria that we specify. Once they are members, they're in a system. And so if they are misleading their clients, if they are promising things they cannot deliver, the client then has the opportunity to complain to someone who can take action against that without having to go through some kind of court process, which is historically the only way you could hold a tax practitioner accountable would be to try and sue them for something. And we all know that's a very, very difficult process. It's a much easier process when you look at that tax practitioner, you can see they're a member of whichever professional body they're a member of, and you can complain to that body and say, this practitioner has done this wrong. Please take action against it. It's a much less formal process. It's a much easier process. Obviously, if SARS picks up that a particular practitioner is involved in this kind of thing frequently, we lodge a complaint. All right? But again, that's something only when it becomes very apparent to us that there's a practitioner who's doing this consistently and is a real problem. For an individual who has a problem, it's much easier for the individual to lay the complaint directly. And that's why we have the whole system of regulating tax practitioners in place. On the question of owing money to SARS, now, we have to balance things up here. Obviously, we need the money for the country. On the other hand, we understand there are people who don't have the money right now to pay us. And that's why the Tax Administration Act has an installment plan arrangement that you can come to with SARS. So that is available. The question then is it being applied where it should be? Are there problems there? And that, unfortunately, I can't speak to from where I sit, but we again try to have a mechanism in place for where those problems arise. That's why we have a complaints resolution mechanism internally, where if you're not being treated properly, you can complain internally. And that is why the Office of the Tax Ombud was also created, so that if internally we can't assist you when you're not being treated correctly, you have an external low-cost mechanism to use to get the problem sorted out. So I hope that helps you in sort of more general terms.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. There was just a couple of other questions that we didn't answer. The one was on, you know, why is NT not being followed by departments? I mean, in our view, in terms of expenditure, departments are following us. They are sticking within the expenditure ceiling. So you can see in this NTBPS, the expenditure amounts were what they were projected to be, and they were sticking within those ceilings. The problem is the reductions in tax revenue that has caused a large problem on the debt side. The 20 billion increase in VAT and the VAT refunds, I think we stated earlier that, you know, we think it's about 11 billion to clear the backlog, not the full 20, and then we will be receiving that full VAT refund amount going forward. Also, the above inflation increase in social grants, how can that be funded? That was actually already done within the budget this year, so those slightly higher than inflation increases have flowed through. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable members, are there any follow-up questions? I noted Honourable Shibangu and Honourable Gala.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you've answered all the questions that I asked, except one, which is how are you going to regulate money collected from the taxpayer that it should not go to the revenue? Measures in place, because people outside of complaining that they paid their tax and the tax authority they challenge. Thank you.
No. Thanks for the answers. Mine is not a question, Chairperson. It's just that some clarity. You know, when you go to a conference, you pick up a lot of these problems where people are thrown from pillar to post. Now, if there's a possibility that you can give me somebody who I can speak to when I pick up these problems. Then the second one, Chairperson, is I'm not sure, maybe you can help as well. We've been dealing with a matter yet, petition. I think you're aware of the matter. Is there any law whereby pensioners are not paid their pensions?
Pensioners are not paid their pensions.
And we've tried all, you know, avenues. And the pension fund holder has agreed in writing, we got that in the matter that was brought to your committee by Honorable Tumbi. They agree they owe the people their pensions, but the money doesn't go to the people. Over 25 years, we're talking of the poorest of the poor people that are dying in poverty. If there's any person who can assist themselves regarding that, I'll be happy. We've got that problem here at the MSOP level. Thank you.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. There is a difficult question of how do you regulate that the money that you collect does not go to the wrong hands. The money that you collect, that it goes to the National Revenue Fund and it is distributed accordingly. Currently, government has got other regulating authorities like your NPA, your SAPS, and SARS will refer maybe tax evasion cases to NPA and tax fraud cases. So currently there are those systems in place. But that said, we are happy that now there is a Zondo Commission on State Capture. So this commission will make recommendations, and maybe we can have an introspection to check if the current systems are working, and maybe we can add some more systems. Similarly, because there is a commission on New Gen Commission on SARS, of which is assisting with the recommendation of how to make systems work. That's all we can say in this regard.
So I know there are some different pension issues, but there are quite a few different issues that I know of. I don't know if it would be possible to email us the details of that, and then we can look at that for the beginning.
Gala can connect with you and forward it to you. Anyone else? Covered? Thank you. Honourable members, we appreciate the presentations that were given to us this morning and all the clarity. Now, we set four public hearings for tomorrow. We haven't received any submissions, but
As we dealt with the money bill, cement bill, we all said public hearings will have to be here. Anyone outside can come to Parliament and say, yes, you advertise, I'm here. I want to talk to you. So we have to be here tomorrow, 10 o'clock, and see what happens between 10 and 10:15. Zulani was just phoned by someone from Port Elizabeth with a tax issue. These people I know, we are having a meeting from Port Elizabeth. So he will engage with you as a team. That's with regard to tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we will reconvene again. First appropriations at 12 o'clock. Why? Because there are caucuses. And I've been informed there's a multi-party women's caucus as well. And the opposition parties are having their caucuses. So at 12 o'clock, we convene. You will tell us again where. First appropriations, and then finance to deal with all the committee reports. There's a whole range of committee reports, including the one on the proposed fiscal framework. Yes, sir. Yeah, we are, yeah, I'm just sensitized, we are here tomorrow again in this room, 514, and for Thursday they will confirm with us, M46 on Thursday, M46 at 12 o'clock. Honorable Motlashuk.
I just didn't rely on being informed that all the programming will be finalized tomorrow, that the Thursday and Friday plenary has been postponed to next week because the NA, because of the 3 days, they will only be adopting and they are giving us the leverage. So I'm looking into the possibility, Chair, that looking at the circumstances and the changes in the program, that can't you bring your meetings forward so that we have also, we become free like all other members of Parliament for the next days, because they will not be here, it will only be us, and it's usually happening. Look into that, and after the confirmation of this thing, that there be a possibility of us bringing these things closer, because we still have next week, we are coming here next week, all of us, at any rate.
All the members, our staff are under severe pressure, and that's why that space is there until Thursday, also for the appropriation staff, to prepare all the reports. It's a stack of reports. It's not one paragraph. It's not that. We want to do quality work. So let us stick to our Thursday program. I ask your cooperation with that, please. 12 o'clock Thursday, tomorrow 10 o'clock, we are back here. Are there any other things from the committee side, Zulani? Nothing else? Honourable members, that brings us then to the end of this meeting. This meeting is adjourned. And thank you to team from Treasury and SAS. Are we correct? All right. Can we have another 5 minutes? Honourable Motlashuk, now, here's an interesting remark. For a men's caucus, now something, when we were in Gauteng, there was something about a men's caucus. Yeah. Honourable Shibongo.
Can we please release our visitors so that we can amicably discuss our visitors?
Well said. At last,
members, don't leave. Please don't leave.
Very rare that the EFF makes a decent comment. So, that comment is welcome.
I'm No problem.
No, that's also a party. Which party? The party that is going to the parliament.
No, I'm saying, what are the rules? You have to remember the party. What are the rules of parliament?
No, that's why. It means you're not getting paid.
Let us send the risk. That's the lady. And I promise you that Sam will come back to it.
The Batman. He might turn up.
Take you to page 12.
Mr. Meekin. You still remember Mr. Meekin? Yeah, the old older gentleman. British American Tobacco, their input. Professor Janny Rousseau, the Fiscal Cliff Study Group, page 13. Page 14, yeah, he wants to watch the aircraft. Page 14, the Peter Marisburg Pensioners Forum. You will remember it was only women that turned up from Peter Marisburg. Quite interesting. Page 15, the Budget Justice Coalition. Page 16 is still their presentation. Page 17, Ian Blas. Agri SA, they didn't appear before us, but they sent their submissions. I must say, it's the first time in 9 years that Agri SA sent something to the Finance Committee. The Socioeconomic Research Institute, Oval. Page 18, page 19, PwC. Page 20, South African Institute of Chartered Accountants.
Yeah.
21 is Peter Marisburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group. I must say, Honorable Karim's town was well presented. On page 22, Alternative Information and Development Center, their input. Then we come to page 23, our observations and recommendations.
No changes.
No changes. I'm just highlighting at the bottom of the paragraph on 10.1, page 23. The matter of how to treat these two reports in future has been addressed in the amendments to the Manifold Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act to be finalized soon. We must take cognizance and digest, and as you so aptly said, Chairperson, so that when we eventually move to the 6th Parliament, we're also in a position to hand over. Remember?
I've got good
news for you, Honorable Bishop. It depends on how soon the President signs the legislation. It's in the Presidency. So that will kick in immediately, that will deal fit, that we, when we deal February with the national budget, it's in terms of the new money bill. Yes, but that's the good news. Page 23, honourable members, page 24.
There was no proposal for any change, anyway, it's just a comment.
No, it's a comment.
Page 24, members, I go to page 25.
Order.
Yeah, order. I go to page 26. I go to page 27. And I go to page 28. The committee is very consistent. Referring to the Public Audit Amendment Bill that was now signed into law. And in our engagements, the first quarter of 2019, we will have to engage with the AG. What progress have the AG been, has he done in terms of that legislation? I'm just sensitizing you. Honorable members, I put the report of the Select Committee for Finance on the proposed fiscal framework to the committee for adoption.
Okay.
A mover for adoption, Honorable Motla Shipping. Can I get a seconder? Honorable Monakedi seconds. Thank you, Honorable members. Is there a minute? Honorable members, we've got two sets of minutes. And it refers to the same day. Select Committee on Finance, all the members, consideration and adoption of the committee report on the 2018 MTBBS revised fiscal framework, page 1. To all the names you attended. Page 2. I put the minutes of the 6th of November, the meeting that started at 9:30, to the committee. Can I move it for adoption? Honourable Monikedi moves. Honourable Gaila seconds. We go to the second set of minutes when we start at 2 o'clock. Consideration and adoption of the committee report on the engagements with the metros. Consideration and adoption of the committee report on the money bills amendment procedure and related matters amendment bill. And consideration of other minutes. Page 1. Those who attended. Page 2. Where we adopted reports and minutes. There was a stack of minutes. Page 3. Point 6. This has been emailed to you as we conducted our meeting this morning. And it has been emailed to you, all the members. I put the minutes of the 6th of November, 14 hours, to the committee. Can I get a mover for adoption? Yeah. Honourable Motlashubing moves for adoption and Honourable Monakeri seconds. Honourable members, there's a program meeting tomorrow. Then we will see what the outcome is and how the program is being put together. For the next week, I'm not referring to this week, talking of the week of the 3rd of December, and we might run into the week after that as well. Why? No, it's not a joke, it's a reality. I'm trying to explain. We had the chair and whips meeting this morning, where your whips were present as well. We're waiting for matters from the National Assembly. One is the bill on the Electoral Act, but there's still a court case running. So the one is affecting the other one. The second one is Section 25, the debate in the National Assembly, but also in the NCOP of the Joint Committee, Constitutional Review Committee, and other legislation coming our way. So finance will conclude everything next Tuesday, the 4th of December, and appropriations. Then it's other work that is coming to the NCOP. That is the framework. Now, to our committee staff, thank you for arranging this meeting. I want you to go and look at our tracking mechanism. Go and track resolutions where we said we're going to have a follow-up meeting, for example, with the Provincial Treasurer of Northern Cape. We are coming back, and you'll see it in the new program, the last week of January. It starts on the 28th or 29th of January. That we see what can we do in terms of our own resolutions. Because we are giving a clean slate to our new members coming in after the 2019 elections, where this staff must coach them to take them through. So those follow-ups, what must we do? Lastly, the committee's finance appropriation must also adopt the, what you call the report, annual report, or what is that, what is called? I think you must address it now, that we just get that picture, because we can't do the report until we finish all our work for 2018, but he'll explain it.
Thanks, Major. This is a difficult one for us staff. We've been having the threat plans. This is one of the issues that the committee has been disputing. Remember, we are expected, once it's within financial year, to do an annual report of the committee and so forth. Now, as staff, we've gotten instruction that we must do a legacy report. For 5 years. The deadline was yesterday. And I've told these guys, but I've got 3 pieces of legislation that I'm doing starting today. About this Thursday. I've got a budget that we need to pass next year. Then, how are you expecting me to submit a legacy report which is, this is not a product of a committee, it's a product of Zolani no Esther in this case. But I've submitted that yesterday. I don't want to be taking to it, this is as if I'm not complying. But I've stated to them, for the sake of compliance, here is this report. But bear in mind that I've got three pieces of legislation that I'm starting with them, that is today. I've got a, with us as finance and appropriations, it's a must that comes next year. We must be here. Elections of no elections. We have to pass the national budget of 2019. But I've submitted that report.
Then there must be a legacy report for the first quarter of 2019 to assist those leadership in the committee section. A legacy report for the first quarter then of 2019, which we can send to them. Someone, Honorable Gaelic. I can't hear Honorable Gaelic, honestly. What's your point of order, Honorable?
You can call a member by his name.
Yeah, we are all honorable, yeah. please, yeah.
We are worried about Solani, the young man, and he's getting older by the three years, he's not in here. So if that has got an energy, you have 10,000 men, so I'm afraid to put 5,000 men. This young man is too young, he looks his own way because of this work here.
All right, I noted that. Honourable members, this staff of both committees work under serious pressure. Ask me. When we have to deal with a report on Friday, adopting it, but it must, or adopting it on Monday or Tuesday, they work through the night over a weekend to do it. That's actually what's happening. And we keep in contact through the whole weekend. So they went through difficult times, but it's coming to an end, and they will have new members facing them in 2019. But thank you for the hard work they did. This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.